Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight, I have a very interesting and educational guest. On the line, I have Darren Aquino. Darren was born in the colorful neighborhood of East New York, where he was exposed to his Italian heritage. He grew up watching and tasting the cooking at Rayo's Restaurant. As a New York youth, he mingled with actors, saw productions of movies being filmed right on his block, all while being taught the resilience of his Italian background by his family. Darren was born with a disability. However, this did not keep him from accomplishing his goals. He learned from a very young age that he would have to work harder, persevere, and continually optimize his skills. His experiences have led him to delve into the variety of professions, including a chef of fine Italian food, acting as a SAG-AFTRA union actor in a variety of TV shows and films, a children's book author, and finally, that which is closest to his heart, a national advocate for the disabled. Darren is a true New Yorker in that he has an endless amount of energy and is very passionate about social justice for the underserved, be it disabled, indigent, or elderly. He began advocating for the disabled in 1983 and incorporated a non-profit Advocates for Disabled Americans, Veterans, Police, Firemen, and Families in 1999. He has been preserving and protecting the inherent constitutional right of the disabled nationwide ever since. Darren has continued to increase the awareness of the challenges and victories of the disabled. Darren, welcome to Insight into Healing. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you, Alexa. I'm looking forward to tonight's show and informing some of our fellow American citizens about what's going on and what their responsibilities are and who's responsible to the citizen with a disability and those that don't have disabilities to have an understanding of people with disabilities.
Yes.
So I'm
and I think it's so important.
Because
I think people really need to be informed of their rights and what to look for and what is legal for them. How did you get started in this whole business?
How did I get started as being an advocate?
I try not to
get emotional about it, but it's always, every time I'm asked the question, it goes back to President Ronald Reagan. I was actually a famous memo of Reagan. President Reagan was a real people person, the one that reached into the people. You know, you've heard many stories about him, and I was one of the letters and the memos that went to the desk of all his cabinet members to see to it what was my problem. I'll tell you the story. I was sitting home. I'm also dyslexic, so today we have technology where writing isn't a problem for me. Writing is difficult only because of the time it takes me, because I have a processing dyslexia. And I'm okay with saying this on the air, and some people, you don't have to do this if people ask you. That's one of the rules and regulations. But I want to share this with you so it's informative to somebody else with dyslexia. When I had it growing up, there was no technology, there was nothing. I went to Catholic school. You were considered stupid and put in the corner with no response. That's just the way the mentality was back then. But getting older in my 20s, I was not a single dad. I was a parent, a new parent, and I had an auto accident on top of the existing disabilities I had, selling sauce and cheese in various areas of New York. I grew up in East Harlem. By the way, you said East New York. That's Brooklyn. East Harlem, New York. So when I had that accident, I had to apply for Social Security. And I wasn't politically motivated in any way. Like, you know, I was a street kid. I grew up in the streets of New York, you know. You tough it out. You bite the bullet. You work. You take care of family if you have a family. And that's that. One day I heard President Reagan on television for some reason or another, and I was just listening to him talking about the country, and I had had my attention. And then when I had the auto accident, I hurt my spine, which added insult to injury because of the polio and club foot I had. And again, I don't mind sharing my disabilities because it's okay. This is to help everybody with the disability, to give them, make them aware. I have an anomaly of them, which is multiple disabilities that affect different parts of my activities. So this is very important for everyone. So when I couldn't do that, I had to apply for welfare to Social Security, because Social Security is a process that takes several months and possible years before they can determine you eligible. So in that process, I filed for the welfare. A couple of months into it, they gave me a problem, and one of the caseworkers came to the house and terminated my welfare, saying I'm not disabled by looking at me. He made a medical assessment. He was a caseworker. I wrote a letter to the president. Actually, my ex-wife did. I dictated the letter. And it was 15 pages long. It was one of those days where you have a lot to say. And because I listened, like I said, going back, I listened to what he said. And all of those things came to mind in my difficulties and what I was facing as a young dad of 23 years old. And they interrupted my benefits, and I sent a letter to the president, and he didn't answer. I discovered these things called telegrams and mailgrams that you can do via telephone, and you could actually call Western Union, dictate your message, and it comes up in the White House, on the White House telex. I had no clue that these things existed. Yeah, it was exciting. So the woman at Western Union told me, a lot of changes went on in my life, a spiritual connection. A lot of things changed for me back then. And I sent a message regarding the 15-page letter telling the president I believed everything that he said, and I sent him a letter, and I didn't even get the courtesy of a response. Don't you care about me? I care about my country. I would die for my country. Doesn't my country care about me? That was all he had to hear. It was a matter of 3 days after they received that telex. And I started getting phone calls. And I was ducking bill collectors because I wasn't working. Couldn't. The spine, to add insult to injury, to the polio on the club foot. And a leg that, my good leg, which was ruined by surgery and malpractice, they destroyed my good leg. And it became bow-legged. So it was a lot of ambulating difficulty. So I get a phone call, and my wife answers the phone, and I, you know how you duck bill collectors when you have no money. So she's listening to him, and he says, "Is this Darren Michael Aquino?" When I signed it, I put my full name for some reason in the mailgram. And she says, "No." He says, "Well, I'm calling on behalf of the President of the United States, Ronald Reagan." He says, "What? The president?" I said, "Okay, so I'm in the bathroom. I'll take the call." You know, okay, he's probably got something to say. But when you think about that, this fellow called, he was the cabinet member and of Veteran Affairs. And he says, "I'm calling on behalf of the president. I have a memo on my desk. He directed me to call you immediately to find out how he can help." This is the part that gets you very emotional, because this is the Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America answering one man in America made a difference to him to respond to me. And he said, "Okay." He said, "How can he help?" I said, "You got a minute? Sit down. There's a whole bunch of things I got to say." He said to me this, "Did you send a 15-page letter to the president?" I says, "I did." He said, "I want you to be assured. He's ordered them to find the letter." that way, but yeah, yeah. Wow. The commander in chief.
He was serious.
He was serious, and he wanted to know everybody from the Department of Education, every cabinet member, Department of Labor, the president has directed me by memo. And it said it on the letter. I had all the letters. And getting divorced, I lost all of them. They're the most precious things I possess. But I still have many things, and maybe one day you'll get to come. We'll get to be together in the same place, and I'll show you some of the photos and things I've had from my career as an advocate and as an actor. The work still continues, but nonetheless, I mean, everything I got calls every day and letters behind it. And I told them about this problem with the social services. That problem disappeared right away, needless to say. But then the interruption, I called. I'll tell you how he stopped that. I lived in Staten Island. And I was calling back then in the 80s. It was like, I don't know, it's so different from today. There was like a borough director of the borough for social service. You have the commissioner for social services, which is welfare department. And then you have directors because there are all the boroughs. So I called the commissioner's office, and I think Koch was mayor at that time. He was mayor at that time. And he gives you the director's number. And this guy is ducking my call because I'm a disabled worker, a disabled client. And I signed documents that I would pay back Social Security from my welfare. Now, they would take it. They would take it. I had to sign these documents. And it wasn't, they weren't giving me money. They were loaning it to me. And I did all that, but some days, because of the conditions, if weather, I just sometimes can't get around. The arthritis gets so bad, and some days I can't. Today, even today, when the weather's bad, I'm a great weather forecaster. So what happened was he was ducking my calls, and it's 4th of July weekend, okay? No food. No stuff for the babies, nothing, no diapers, nothing. I called the White House. I had a contact number. Her name was Charlene Cozart. I'll never forget her name as long as I live. She was like the person that would always take my call, and she remained in the White House 20 years after that. Imagine that. Because it's agency liaison to the president. And she says, Mr. Aquino, and along with that letter that I sent, by the way, I sent medical documents of from the hospital of my medical condition because I stressed that I would do anything. I would work in the White House. I'd be a maintenance man because I want to support my child. And I said, this is why there's criminals in the streets, because there's no hope for them. It was a very detailed letter pouring out my heart. And I never do that because I was a street kid. You know what I mean? You tough it up, bite the bullet. But I just felt compelled to share this all with the president. And this is in the presidential library. All of these documents can be verified. They're there. The president's library, you could access everything. Everything that was in his system, every communication, there's a record of it for history. And every action he took. So back to the welfare. So this guy's ducking my calls. So I call Charlene Cozart, and she says, hi. And we became friends, the greatest of friends throughout the years. It was just amazing, and we never met. So I told her my dilemma that she said, what? She said, well, I know that. I've seen your medical. She said, we don't generally do this. Because of the battle of the states and all. But we have a contact, and he's a public affairs. He's the mediator for us to get involved. And she says, I'm going to give him a call, but I want you to write this number down, Mr. Aquino. She says, because I know that you're disabled, and we're going to help you with this. and she was Southern accent, just such a, she warmed your heart listening to her on the phone. She was so amazing. Mm-hmm. And she says, if he don't call you back, here's his number, and you tell him that I said to call, okay? He doesn't call me. I have the number. I ring his phone. So you got to picture this. I say, all of a sudden, I dial his number. I says, hello, this is Mr. Aquino. He says, you didn't get a phone call yet? He says, you stay by your phone, because he knew now. Remember, the Staten Island Director's Office for Social Services was not responding, and they terminated my benefits. It's 4th of July weekend, and it's Thursday. Friday, everything's going to shut down. Saturday, everything's going to be done. It's Friday's 4th of July. I'm going to have nothing. I'm going to have nothing, yeah. Be hungry. I got baby, no diapers, no milk. Now I have a choice. I can go out and steal. You know, I don't have a problem with doing whatever I have to do, because that was my mentality then as a young man. And I have baby, you know, and just prior to that, having that baby, my current wife at the time almost died from hemorrhaging because of an error with the hospital, left some of the placenta in and caused a condition to her. So I left that part out. There was a lot of stuff going on.
You've definitely had a lot of trauma in your life, starting at such an early age.
Oh, yeah, you bet. But here's where it gets good. Here's where the power of the president comes in hand. And you're going to love this, and this is what gave me the passion. And when I called that gentleman, the public affairs guy, his name I don't remember. The caseworker, I forgot his name, but I'm going to tell you a funny thing, and then we'll talk more about ADA. Now, he calls, and he says, public affairs says to me, if he doesn't call you back in 2 minutes, you call me immediately. I hang up the phone. I don't know, 40 seconds went by, and this is the guy that was not taking my calls. I called him for days, begging for help. The phone rings in 30 seconds. Mr. Aquino, he says, oh, my gosh, I've been trying to get you. I said, yeah, right. He says we reviewed the medical. Apparently, there was some mistake that the worker closed your case. I said, there was no mistake. He made a medical assessment. He thought he was a doctor and the gatekeeper for the finances of social service. And he made a personal opinion and terminated my benefits, assessing me in the manner in which he felt appropriate. That's not a due process, and that's not fair. Imagine me at 23 using the words due process. After that, he says, I have no food in this. And he says, but it wasn't necessary to call the White House. I says, oh, yes, it was. I'm an American citizen. You treated me like I was a second-rate criminal. I asked you for help, and I signed a document paying you back. You weren't giving me anything. I said, you discriminated against me. Okay, well, I don't want to make any promises. The guy who closed my case, the caseworker, within Friday morning, while the bank said they delivered 2 food stamp vouchers. They backed it up. They doubled 2 emergency checks. The guy that closed my case came in like a humble man. I'm very sorry. It wasn't necessary to call the White House. They assigned a homebound person to me that I didn't even have to go there anymore to those, what they called back then, face-to-face meetings to just reevaluate
and
you
and
recertify
you. They still do
you.
The face-to-face.
Yes,
yep,
they
still do the face-to-face.
I'm the guy who put in place the homebound services. That was my first task, okay? That was the first thing I started. And it was Reagan who inspired me. And I'll tell you, as we move into the show and tell you more, I got to honor him later. He was the man. He was the inspiration for the founding. So when that gentleman came back, he handed me those vouchers, and they made him come and do it. They made him do it because later on, the person they assigned to my case was a veteran. And they thought I was a veteran because of the part in the letter, the mailgram, that I said I would die for my country. And that stands today. I am 3-4 generations military service to the country, not by me, but by my relatives. Up to my current one serving now is my nephew, a major in the Marines. So I'm very passionate for our veterans. I understand where my freedom came from and who paid for it. So
yes,
they're always on the top of my list. So after that, I said, like, wow. The guy, the representative that was my new caseworker told me all about it. And he says, you know, on your face-to-face, if you could possibly, and I had a vehicle, you know, nothing special, and he says, if you can have perhaps pass, I could meet you right in front of the facility. I'll run down to you, sign the papers, and that way there'll be no interruption. We could do this faster. I said, of course, I'll work with you. And he was telling me that he served, and he says, I want to show you something. He comes over to the car. I was with my brother. My brother drove me at the time, God rest his soul. He's not with us any longer. But the guy comes over. I want to show you this. He shows me the folder. Give him whatever he wants. White House pressure.
Wow.
Yeah, that was huge.
But it shows how much passion and resilience you have, and how much work it is to get what you want, what you deserve. And I think it really speaks volumes of your resilience and your passion, integrity. But then it also says, what about those who don't have support, who don't have that resilience? They get lost in the crowd.
And they get lost, and they fall into the cracks of the bureaucracies of the cities, the states, and that's why I was. That's why it was like a spiritual thing as well for me. You know, it brought me closer to my faith, because in that time of my trouble, not just anybody, the commander-in-chief of the United States, and then later I became an actor like Reagan, who was the founder of our union. You know, the Soviet Union was founded by Ronald Reagan. And that's huge. So that's when I started doing that, and then I changed things, and then I became friends with so many of the people that were on page with it, because you know why? Family members suffered from disabilities, so I started to embrace a crowd, and that crowd started to embrace me. And before you knew it, here we are 32 years later, and I'm the National Chief Advocate for Disabled, of an organization I founded, inspired by government intervention, by a president who cared about the people, and really cared about the people, and would be, he used to mail out checks to families. He sent one family, $2,000 of his own money. He'd get it. He was the man. There was no president like him. Yeah, he was my hero. Later, he's the one that put me into the Republican Party. I was a member of the Legion of Merit with the highest award in the Republican Party. I got a medal from him and Bush with the presidential seal lapel pin. Oh my God, so many things, etches and things, so many things from that, and becoming a diehard Republican I need to say this because, you know, we have Democrats and Republicans. And we're all Americans. It's just our democracy lets us have choices and different opinions. But at the end of the day, Republican, Democrat, conservative, and other parties just keep growing. We're all Americans, and we should try to work together. And I'm not happy with some of the Republicans that were out there. And I got away from them for a while because they weren't like the values that Ronald Reagan inspired in me of what a Republican's supposed to be, because like me, I grew up Democrat because of my father. Reagan was a Democrat and then went Republican because there were, you know, better insights and better attitudes for the good of all of the people. And Ronald Reagan was a person that was for the good of all upstanding, patriotic Americans who had a love and desire to make this country better. I became an advocate to do that for a specific group, a group that I'm proud to be part of, that because there are so many numbers, over 140 million disabled Americans in the country, we're considered a group. Like actors in the union are considered union actors to be a disabled American. I have no, I don't feel any dishonor, but very honored to be the person who's paved a lot of roads with change in society. And President George Bush, another supporter of me. I got many photos, and I was at Washington a lot. Another supporter. Some people didn't like GW. I loved him. He was good to the disabled and expedited many. He did many things for me. Social Security, they were afraid of me. They were afraid. Because you see, these bodies of government that we set up, they think they're independent of the people they serve. I'm just an arrogant advocate because my passion is so deep. I go in and remind them that they're servants of the people, and they just don't like that. Well, that's too bad. You know, be a better American and understand that this service program is for the good of Americans. Don't sit here like some kind of bulldog pit bull, like against a person. Yes, and yes, there are some people that fake their disabilities. We're very aware of that. We don't support that. You're going to have crime and corruption in every walk of life. Everybody's going to try and get over. But, you know, but the ones that are steadfast, uplifting, we have to work with the good that we have to eventually get rid of the bad. If everybody teams up, we can do it. We can do it. It's who wants to participate. Some people get lazy and they have enough and they don't care. You see, even when I get enough, I still got to do more. Because I think, and see, it's what Reagan put in me. He was the commander-in-chief. He cared about my circumstance. He was the president. He was rich. He was an actor. But he cared about my circumstance and wanted to do something to change it. And that's what he instilled in me, the legacy he left in me.
And it sounds like that you were really advocating too. What are some basic, what are rights of the disabled that you don't, that you think fall under the cracks that even disabled don't even realize, or that people should know these are basic rights that the disabled have that you find so many times are just swept under the rug?
Well, you know, they wait for you to invoke your rights. You know, it's a public law that the 101st Congress in 1990 enacted after a long train of abuses to people with disabilities. You know, it's not an easy subject because it's the paramount law of laws, because we have mental illness, the silent killer, and I've been saying this for years. I've sent letters to the president. Only this presidency is one that changed all the phone numbers. I had direct connect. Clinton was there. Bush was there. Reagan was there. Bush Jr. was there. He comes in and changes all those access numbers. Who does he think he is? He's a servant. He took a job to serve the people and set it up in his manner, which is have been complicated for the work that I do, because it's limiting the enforcement of the government agencies that fall under the jurisdiction of the president, which are federal agencies, Social Security, Department of Education, all of those on the federal level, where a client who becomes a member comes to me that is facing a discriminatory act in one of these entities known as entities. You got to look at them as government entities. The ADA talks of different levels of society in which who maintains responsibility of the act, and everyone. No one is exempt from the ADA except just like an individual. You can't sue or fight an individual. And every day the ADA gets modified because it must follow the warranted need. You can't determine the accommodation that's needed. That's why they say readily achievable. You prepare the place based on what you do know, and then you modify it as we grow as a nation, as a city. You have to be aware. In 1996, the DOJ sent out a mandate to all the states of revamping every government entity to be up to speed with the practices and policies of government towards people with disabilities for fair and equal treatment and inclusion of practices, policies, services, enjoyments, good services, protections, and enjoyments. Now, that covers everything in life, because let's define a disability. What's a disability? An effect of a major life activity. What's a major life activity? Walking, seeing, talking, breathing, standing, sitting, squatting. These are major life activities that we do every day. And due to the variety of disabilities, mental illness being one of those that I'm very passionate for, because even some of our men and women who come back from serving this great nation, making the sacrifice, and some of them making the ultimate sacrifice, that we have this opportunity. I'll always acknowledge our veterans in every conversation. So, you know.
I feel the same way. I feel very strongly about that, too.
And because my nephew's still serving in the reserves, and he's a major, and we could have lost him in Iraq, and he was a pilot, and, you know, I feel very deeply about that. And I'm grateful that the opportunity we have here right now to sit and freely speak is because they went to defend the only surviving document that established our freedom, which is the Declaration of Independence, which then turned into the Constitution of the United States. And these men and women go freely, their patriotism in hand, to defend their families. But they look at us, they look at all Americans as one big family. And when you forsake these guys, these men and women, you really piss me off, because these are the ones that went to prepare the way for us. So when we go to these service centers, and what do you need to know? First of all, you need to know that you don't always have to show up, and you have what they have Title II if you're dealing with a government entity, and you have dyslexia like me, and you have a club foot like me. There's not just one accommodation that must be made. You understand? And it must meet the warranted need of accommodations. And that's the ones that give you the challenge when something is presented to you. A task is put before you by the entity. Complete, like say, okay, fill out this document. If you can't fill it out, the law requires under Title II, which is effective communication, okay, by a public and government entity. They are to provide a note taker to do it for you in an uplifting way, in an inclusive manner, not demeaning or derogatory, hurtful or harmful to your integrity. And needless to say, they always do the opposite. I get more phone calls than you could imagine. And it's come a long way. The act is 25 years old. And when Bush was president, we've enforced a lot of things. He made a lot of changes, even with the Social Security. I removed one of the policies. They used to have you have reconsiderations. They still have reconsiderations due to evidentiary issues within applying under the law. But one of the practices that they do that takes the taxpayers' money and wastes it, and the state of New York and every state, they have a determinations body that after the Supreme Court ruling of Schistler versus Heckler, understand these rulings. When it's named by someone, that's the person who fought the Secretary of Social Security. And Heckler at the time was the secretary. Schistler was the individual who brought the action and said, when he went to Social Security, I'm going to show you why I broke the policy. In 1986, I won under this rule, okay, because my file got lost for 6 years, even while the president was helping spiteful people that are in parties, that are party people, and not, they make themselves a party member and forget that they're Americans. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Instead of saying you're an American, they'll say, well, I'm a Democrat and the current president. All right, he called up to make help. I'll fix this guy. And you have that. You have that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to talk about that because politicians like to be professional liars. And I'm not a politician. I'm an American and an advocate. And I fight for my fellow American because my president, my commander-in-chief fought for me as the commander-in-chief. So I learned through agencies and wind up getting phone numbers how to start fighting. So it was pretty cool. And I liked my new job. I didn't get paid for it. I still don't get paid for it. But it's my contribution back to the country. So needless to say, we resolved this problem because the rule says that when you're being assessed, you go into Social Security and they send you for an IMA, they call it now, a consultative exam. Social Security has a body of doctors within the determination. The Heckler, the Shishler rule, says that it's impossible for the determining doctor, the expert that gives them an opportunity to see if you're lying or you're a scammer when you're applying for federal aid, to assess you. And that's fair, and that's good. So the individual goes in, and the doctor looks at you for 10 minutes. He takes a few notes, and he knows nothing about you. And the Supreme Court said, we agree. You know, so they shifted the power to the treating physician. A treating physician is someone who treated you for more than a year and who's been consistently working and developing your condition, who has the most knowledge of your abilities. And being that they were filing for disability, this man was denied because of the independent agency. The Supreme Court said, no, the case is going back for payment because you didn't determine it correctly, because that doctor who saw him could not fathom his abilities in 10 minutes. It's impossible. And here's how they deceive the people of that ward, which is very interesting. How do they get around that? I'm going to show you how they get around that. When you go and file a claim today, and this is why I go, I have a claim, I have two claims for people right now. And if you piss them off or aggravate them or call their supervisors, your case gets shuffled. And I worked with them for the last 30 years. Problem is, after 20, they retire. So now I'm facing a whole bunch of new people who are very aggressively depriving people of their rights. But now, so what happens is when you go to an exam, now to comply with the Shishler rule, and they say to enforce the medical record, guess what doesn't show up when you go to be assessed? Your medical jacket, what they are supposed to enforce, the condition that the treating physician says, that says and qualifies you as a disabled person. It's never present when you're examined. So
why?
So that they don't have to enforce the law. It's a scam with inside, and it's the state agency that does it. I told this to President Bush, and I said, most of the money that's spent from Social Security, see, when you're the president, you have to listen to your advisors. President Bush would listen to the American public, too, GW, both father and son. When I made him aware of this, I said, they're billing the federal government, and they're not complying with this rule. He made it that if you get denied, because I put this in place, once you get denied the first time, you go right to hearing. The other process, they used to make you do it twice. Twice made them more money, because you had to see these guys again. I changed it, and Bush agreed, and he changed the policy.
And who is paying for that billing? Is it the taxpayers? Is it insurance? Who's paying for
it? It comes from the federal government of our federal taxes that pay the state agency to defeat you in your disability, which makes no sense. But here's the problem. They even have another agency outside of the panel of doctors that they have as staff. So they're giving away money, and a lot of these are fly-by-night. A lot of Russian agencies are developing, and they're complaining about some of these groups, and they're allocating that they're hooked up to mobsters and gangsters, and they're having government positions, and assessment positions that deal with the United States Social Security. And the state contracts them. And so that means the governor is not doing his due diligence, and the American people are falling victim to it. And so my advocating still gets more difficult, because when you have a change of command, I have to reestablish my contacts all over again because they're retiring out. I had managers leave. Darren, it was good working with you. You're an amazing guy. I've never seen anybody so passionate. Keep up the good work. We need people like you. The truth is, I'm not special. We could all be me. You and me can team up. What we need to do is get the American people on page with understanding, to know their rights, and to step up with me. You know, let's do this together. Many hands make light work. I'll be fighting these battles forever if we don't elect the right officials. You know what I'm saying? These people work for us. We need to change the spirit of the American person. We need to show them where the flaws are and who created them. And I'm sorry to say it was us. We made bad election choices, bad ones, horrible ones. Look at our city today in New York. Horrible decisions have provoked crime and things in the street. A man, Eric Gardner, a disabled man, was choked to death by members of NYPD. My brother's a cop. We have the best police department in the country. But like every group, like I said in the beginning, every group, we have a few of those bad apples. We need to put in place better oversight. I told Mayor de Blasio, because there was a disabled person at the police officer's funeral, because I represent disabled police, I show up at all the funerals. And I told him, I said, I got an idea for you. I gave him the benefit of the doubt, growing up as an Italian-American. And by the way, he's German, and he uses his mother's maiden name. That's not his real name. His name is Wilhelm. I'm a little troubled that he wouldn't use his father's name, his birth name, but he used his mother's name, and that's to deceive people.
Wow.
I'm not comfortable
with
that. I never
knew that. No, it's not comfortable at all.
That's very bad. And needless to say, the homeless increased, and there were disabled homeless. That's why we're talking these subjects. We got disabled homeless veterans in the street. How do we fix this problem? I put literally hundreds of letters and on Facebook, and now because they're social media searching, they're saying and remarking to the things I put out there that are over 4 years old. You want to fix the housing homeless problem? Very simple. I gave an idea to Mayor Koch after the Reagan situation. That's how Habitat Humanity started, because we have empty vacant space in New York that belongs to the city and the state and the federal government. Building the cities, and because of the separation of states with like the battle of the states, but in this time of crisis, wherever it concerns the American citizen for fair and equal treatment and opportunity, we can take those places. We can go to the Donald Trumps, and I'm not happy with him right now either, after his humiliating the disabled people. He has no support from us any longer. We have to look at this. People are getting ratings on the stories that are being told. But we are the story they're talking about. We are the ones that can fix the problem. We don't need them. We need to all get on page together is what we need to do. We need to come together as a people.
Let me ask you, if someone is disabled and they're listening to the show and they have a question, they have concern, they need an advocate, how do they contact you? What steps would you tell them to do? What would you recommend?
Well, I would tell them to go to the website. If they're remembering my name, all they got to do is Google. If they forget going to www.adaadvocates.com, all they got to do is Google Darren Aquino. Two names will come up. My acting name, Darren Dion Aquino, and Darren Aquino. The Darren Aquino will also show the federal cases I fought, and the one that's before the court now, a federal matter for discrimination concerning the Board of Election. And this is another, there are so many problems because of the amount of disabled Americans in the country. is nearly 50% capacity. The government's lying to you on the number, because that changes everything. That's the American voter. That can sway votes and change the way and the direction of this country. You know, and people need to be more aware. And they have to.
Where can they read up about their rights for people who are disabled, people who are not disabled?
That's simple. That's real simple. They go online, and they can go to the Americans with Disabilities Act. Just type it in, and if you have accessible or you're disabled like me, I use a speak-in device, like even my phone that I'm talking to you now, my Samsung. Thank God for technology. And I speak it in, and I say, Department of Justice, Civil Rights. The Americans with Disabilities Act comes up, and it goes to every section. And if you have a basic understanding to try and defend yourself, or you have a question or concern if you're in that direction, then you look me up, call me up, send me an email. I'm right here for you. I'm here. I've been here for 30 years. I ain't going anywhere. I will run for mayor. That's another story, but I will be here.
Yes, tell us about that. I've seen that you're wanting to run for mayor. Tell us about that platform.
Well, that platform is that. Well, one of the things, we wouldn't have homeless veterans in New York because of the housing. And like I said, one of the things I would change is I would first address the security of our city, because we're under threat now, and that's becoming worse. I would first better train our police officers. You know, they're starting to do that now, and they save these things towards, like, Mayor de Blasio's had 2 years. He's had 33 vacations already. You believe it? In 2 years, 33. 33, wow. Averaging $16,000 to $20,000 a vacation on the back of the people. And you wonder why he shows up late? Because he's tired. He's out partying. On the money of the people. He didn't show up to some of these funerals on time to greet the families. When the body of a police officer who was killed in the line of duty, you're at the funeral home with the body to greet the parents. You don't come after the parents. You're there to greet them because this is your problem. He provoked this by not handling the situation with Eric Gardner and the many other appearing to be police brutality. Not everything is what it seems, but clearly when they choked that man, I would have dealt with that. If I was the mayor then, that problem would have been handled immediately. I show up at the scene because a tragedy resulted in that. When the people hire me, I work for you. You don't work for me. I'm called to duty and serve is what I'll do. Okay, I will go and deal with that. Those police officers would have been dismissed. I would have took their guns and shields immediately, and I would have turned it over to the special prosecutor because it was too questionable. We cannot impede the integrity of the whole department because of four or five bad men. We cannot do that. I would not do that because we have the greatest police department in the country, the most courageous men. Brian Moore, a young man, approached that car, and because of the problems that were caused by the mayor and his direction and Bratton, he's no better. He's no better. These are men that don't come from New York. They come from Boston. What do they know about New York and New Yorkers? Why did we hire this man? He wasn't a good public advocate because of party. So we need to change and not so much focus on our party. Let's focus on our losses and how we can gain them back again by investigating the candidate. When I come out there in the next couple of months, know me, get to know me, find out who I am. Who am I? I'm one of you. I'm your fellow New Yorker. I'm the guy who's been fighting. I don't want a paycheck. I want change. You want change. So let's make change. Let's do what our forefathers planned for us to do, to come together now as a bigger nation with more power, with more hands to do more work. It started small, and look what we developed. New York is the greatest city in the world. It's the one that brings change. It's the one that brings style. It's the one that brings trend. It's the one that says, what is an American? They look to New York to find out what a true American is. why do you think we were attacked on 9/11? I was there when the first plane hit. Okay? Wow. This is who we are. So we're going to change that. I will take all of the city housing. I will go to people like Donald Trump, all of our rich people in the city, and I will work 7 days a week until our city's fixed. Because
well, it sounds like you work 7 days a week as it is. I mean, I was about to ask you, how do you find the time? How do you sleep at night? Because you are working on such hard cases. I mean, it seems like you've been working on so many different cases and so many things going to court. How do you find the time?
Well, fortunately, because I formed the organization, it's the only one of its kind, every member and all of the members we have around the country as a national organization has the privilege of working from their home. It's not so much of a privilege. It's an accommodation. So I can do most things, and because I've enforced a lot, so I can do a lot of faxing. Not everybody's compliant, but you see, that's the one of the reasons why I want to take a government office, is I'm going to make everything compliant. The disabled citizen, there are 10 million disabled New Yorkers in the state of New York. You know how many able-bodied there are in the state of New York? 9 million.
Wow.
There are 19 million in the state. New York City has, they keep saying 8 million. It's 9 million. They're lying. Okay? They tell you numbers. And one of the other things I wouldn't do, and this is important because here's where other programs get cut for the disabled. They cut mental illness, the governor. And I like Andrew Cuomo. He's a good person. But now his leadership is starting to fail. And a lot of these guys are under question now, just like Silver. Handcuffs, $5 million embezzlement, Dean Skelos, Nassau County, going to jail. These are the people we trusted, so we need to wise up as New Yorkers. We need some unprofessional politicians, people with dreams and visions, people who know the streets, people who feel the heartbeat of other people who grew up in a service area like myself. I'm not the only one that's been doing good things. There are others. I welcome them. But if we don't stand for something, we're going to fall for everything. So I'm going to take the hospital and I'm going to go to the governor, and he's either going to agree with me or I'm going to make a federal case about it. And everybody who knows me knows I literally make a federal case about it. And I will go and take over Pilgrim State Hospital. Do you know Pilgrim State Hospital?
No, I
don't.
Everybody.
Where is that? Yeah, let me give all the listeners an idea. Go online and look up the old Pilgrim State Hospital. Now, we can tell the governor what he's going to do, or we can let him tell us what he's going to do. Understand your rights and your responsibilities. When our forefathers made that document, they were telling us what to do, not government what to do. We tell government what to do. We've let that tide change. And we listen to the lying stories of Bill de Blasio, who provoked rioting in the street by not dealing with the problems that the New York City Police Department has and handling it. These riotings and protesting are a result of that. He provoked it because of leadership. And the cops, why do you think the cops turn their back on him? Because he's not leading. And it's not the commissioner's job to lead. It's the commissioner's job to follow the leadership. You've segregated the police from the communities. When I was a child, I knew every cop's name. He knew my name and my parents. He knew my name and my parents. And if I didn't listen, I got a kick in the pants. And you know what? That was so much better then. There was a relationship. When I take office, I will rebuild that relationship. I will be at every precinct in New York City, and I will have an open house in every borough with the precinct to meet the community and meet your cops. Because what was the benefit of that was is when we were kids, if an outsider or a crime happened, who do you think the cops came to? The kid, the street kids. Did you see anything? Anybody from out of the neighborhood? Anything look unfamiliar? That was a great relationship. And some days when there was no money and the kids, you know, back in the day, the cops would buy us sodas and ice cream and hamburgers and then just take off and leave. You know, you don't have to. I'm going to do that again. Some things weren't broke. They didn't need to be fixed. And they fixed it, give it the appearance of change and prosperity by false leadership through politics. We're not politicians. We're New Yorkers. We're simple people. with a simple plan. Everybody should have an opportunity. I'm going to bring opportunity. But anyway, back to the hospital. You look at this hospital, I'm going to take it and refurbish it, and I'm going to get a guy, and I will call Donald Trump, okay? And he will take my call. Listen, give us some of that money. Let's get some contractors. We'll refurbish this immediately. And to all of those veterans who have some skills that they picked up in the military, here's your new permanent free housing. We're sorry it took so long. I'll take the brunt of it for the country and say, I'm sorry that I didn't take an office sooner to implement this plan to give you what you deserve. My respect and admiration and gratitude for what you did to sacrifice yourself for me. I'm very sorry that it took so long. God bless you and thank you for your service. That's what I would do, and that's what I will do when I take office. And I'll do that throughout the city.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to thank you. We're at the end of the show, and I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the show this evening and for providing so much education. And I know definitely you're going to be contacted with more information. We could go on, but I would just like to thank you so much for all the hard work that you're doing.
It's my pleasure. I love my city, and I love my fellow Americans. You know, we got to bring change, so be aware of your rights as a citizen, or if you have a child, understand. And if you have questions, just Google my name. If you remember my name, just, you know, forget that I acted Sopranos, Law and Order, forget that. Just look me up as an advocate for disabled and go to the computer, Advocates for Disabled. I'll come up. I'm one of the first that comes up in Google, and I'm here to help you. I don't care what your problem is, and if you have a legitimate argument, and you're serious, and it's real. I've had a lot of people, you know, present themselves falsely, as we do in society. We have the cheater,
mm-hmm.
you know. But if you have a genuine problem, my phone, I never turn away a call. I've gotten calls at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning because of emergency. That's what I do. That's what I promised I would do. My commander-in-chief cared about me. It's a 24-hour operation. If it's an emergency, I might be half asleep, but I'll take your call and I'll say, okay, how emergency is it? And I go out and I don't even know people, but I know what it feels like to be there. And Reagan pulled me out of that. So I'm here, I'm available. And hopefully next year, as I come out and campaign, you know, I hope I become mayor because these problems, our city, I will strengthen it. I will build it. There will be opportunity, and there will be total inclusion. There won't be token people in there like they have given the appearance of services, because that's what they do. I will change those services, and I will cap certain things and get rid of old administrations and put New Yorkers to work that are out of work who suffered from the economy crunch. We're going to rebuild the entire administration with real New Yorkers, because that's what's going to fix our city.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, everyone, thank you for tuning in to Insight into Healing. If you have any questions, you can send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com and also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Everyone have a good night and God bless.